Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to You're Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
If there's one thing that Fox News has perfected, it's that, like, having outrage for the sake of attention. You know what I mean? Like, just being outraged about something just to piss people off. And it is currently the staple of social media, but Fox News really invented, or at least popularized, this like process of false outrage. And one of their favorite things to be outraged about is things around the holidays. And this year, it is no different. So Jesse Waters, he's one of the douchebag hosts who always will, he wants to be the Bill O'Reilly, but he'll never be the Bill O'Reilly. And you can see in his eyes.
He replaced Tucker Carlson.
He replaced Tucker. He'll never be Tucker. He'll never be Bill. And you can see he's just so hungry to be it, but he can't be it. It ain't going to happen. Mm-hmm. But Jesse Waters featured two inclusive Target products on his show, a Pride Nutcracker, which, let's be real, that basically sells itself, and and a Black Santa in a wheelchair. And Waters had Riley Gaines, who's a former swimmer and anti-trans activist, on to talk about it. Let's play a clip of what she said.
It doesn't make sense. You have to ask yourself, you know, why do they keep pushing this? Who are they trying to appeal to? Because despite how what the media portrays or how politicians are voting, this doesn't represent the overwhelming majority of how this country, really how the world, feels on this issue. I think majority of people, parents especially, they can acknowledge that gay Nutcracker and Black disabled Santa has gone way too far. The pendulum has swung.
Yeah, I mean,
wait.
The pendulum swung too far, guys.
Wait. All right. So I guess my assumption is the gay Nutcracker is like somewhat sexualized.
No,
is that
not at all. It literally is a Nutcracker, a traditional Nutcracker with a rainbow on it.
Okay, so
pretty gay. I mean, it's got like, sorry, Brent. It's just it's rainbow flag, and then there's a Santa in the same picture. That's
okay. Well,
black
so we'll get back to that. But I mean, absolutely objectively, why would you be offended if Santa is black and in a wheelchair? Like, like since when is that there? Like, I understand Fox News has never been a huge ally of the community, and I'm used to it, and I can deal with it. But like, are they going after the concept that Santa could be black and that might sound a little silly that Santa's in a wheelchair, but like, why is that how could that be offensive to anyone?
Also,
Megyn Kelly on Fox News years ago literally said Santa is white.
Yeah.
And I mean, she was talking about a fictional character, but very seriously, added fuel to the fire in Fox News's fight to keep Christ and Christmas. And they literally and single-handedly fuel the idea that there's some war on Christmas by leftists and Jews, I guess, and blacks.
That's what I don't understand is that, like, I don't ever remember there being an aggressive campaign to take the word Christmas out of anything ever, really. It's never been offensive to me, either before I converted or after I converted. But also, like, it's from the very beginning when this outrage over Happy Holidays or saying Merry Christmas started, it always felt like a false outrage. It felt like a means to make people angry from the very beginning. Of course.
Yeah, for no real reason.
It's victimization of people who are in the majority.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear the curveball of the century though? So I never thought to me, Happy Holidays is just logistically makes sense because there are multiple holidays. Yes, I understand that Hanukkah isn't celebrated by everyone, but there's Hanukkah, there's Christmas, and there's also New Year's. Yeah. So even if you're a God-fearing Christian, you have Christmas, you have New Year's, like Happy Holidays makes sense.
Yeah.
But, and I'm sure she wouldn't love if I said this, my mom is a dye-in-the-wool liberal Democrat, but she thinks Happy Holidays is sometimes a little silly, and she says Merry Christmas to people.
Really? Yeah. Why? Yeah. What's the logic behind it?
Yeah, she's just like, oh, it's so silly. It's like almost everyone celebrates Christmas. I mean, we are atheists, but we celebrate Christmas. Like,
yeah, of
and
course.
So she's like, I just say Merry Christmas. But she of course has Jewish friends and she would never say it to a Jewish person, but like.
But how do you know? That's the thing. That's just it though. Like it falls on the precipice of that, you know, the person is Jewish and thus does not celebrate Christmas. But in general, if you're just saying goodbye or hello or whatever, having greetings to like a Target employee, let's say, and you're leaving the store with their bag of stuff and they say Happy Holidays to you, then do you just say Merry Christmas back, not knowing who they are, where they're coming from? Like that.
I mean, she's not anti-Happy Holidays, but she, you know, I think if someone says Merry Christmas, she'll say Merry Christmas back.
But see, that's where the logic comes in. Like what you were saying about it's just logical to say Happy Holidays because of the fact that when I leave, I don't know this woman who works at Target, this cashier's life at Target. So I'm not going to say something that might not be applicable to her. I'm just going to say, yeah, well, Happy Holidays. You know what I mean? Like, just makes sense to me.
No, I mean, it makes sense to me. It covers all the bases, but it's so like, it's so needlessly mean-spirited.
So to be mean-spirited, yes.
Be against a black Santa in a wheelchair. Like, that's just like, that's just cruel. How is there, I'm receptive to the notion that sometimes, you know, our society and social media and whatever makes us do silly things in the name of politics these days. Like, I get it. And sometimes I see t-shirts or whatever that I think are a little extreme, one direction or another politically.
You mean like the one that, you like, sent us earlier that said, it ain't the weekend till I'm getting my pussy ate.
Pussy ate.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. That was a t-shirt I had printed. That said, I like to be against a black Santa in a wheelchair is just, I know I keep saying it. It's just cruel.
Well, and that's the thing is that
doesn't make sense.
The side arguing this sort of like war on Christmas, their argument is stemmed from them being primarily Christian and them being the idea of that it is a Christian holiday, a Christian holiday of giving, of being kind, of being, you know, aware of your fellow man, if you will. And yet they are actively doing the opposite by making it an aggressive, mean holiday by saying, oh, well,
racialized,
doing this wrong, you're not celebrating it right. When it's like, well, I mean, if someone barged into your house and told you you were celebrating Christmas incorrectly, like, I feel like that would be a bit of an invasion. And that's exactly what they're kind of doing.
It's just insane.
It really is insane.
It's just, I mean, but it's also like proto Fox News to me. It's like a smarmy news anchor, you know, who's, I don't think surprisingly young and blonde and white, mm-hmm. you know, talking in this really smarmy way about two things that, quite honestly, who cares? Like, why would Riley Gaines give a shit?
And that's what you go back to, which is, you know, I'm always harping on quitting social media, but like, even if you're a conservative, how can you watch drivel like that?
Right.
Well, and say, and continue to stay as tuned and, you know, clued in as ever before. Like, that's just like insane to me.
Well, the whole reason why they're on Fox News, and I use they, them pronouns for her because they hate it. They hate it.
Yeah, she's like an anti-trans lady.
And that's what I mean. The only reason why they're on the network is because of the language they use that's anti-trans. That's their only qualification. Sure, they were an Olympic swimmer, but That's not why they're on Fox News. They're on Fox News because of the crazy anti-trans things that they tweet. The one thing that I will say that's interesting about this is the Target CEO, he gave an interview recently to CNBC sort of talking about the aggressive behavior from the right around a lot of the Pride merch. And even though they took some merchandise down during the height of sort of that aggressive behavior, they've, of course, committed and recommitted to having Pride merch in the stores and stuff. But he said that what I saw back in May is the first time since I've been in this job where I had store members saying it's not safe to come to work. And he went on to say, like, and we're talking like during COVID, we're talking during the Black Lives Matter protests that were happening all around the country with many of the stores, you know, being impacted by it. He was like, I've never heard that from employees. It's during this campaign, this aggressive campaign from the right on Pride merchandise specifically and the Bud Light stuff that he was like, our employees were actively afraid. And that is why we made the decisions we made, which in a weird way, I don't like supporting this sort of like CEO of this company, because I'm sure he has only business on his mind. But that said, I'm also like, yeah, I wouldn't want to be an employee put in that position either. You know what I mean? They're just trying to make some money. Yeah.
The irony about all this, or not about this topic, but I'm obsessed with the fact that Jesse Waters, his mom, is like fiercely Democratic, like outright Democratic, and called in on his first show. And I'm just pulled this up, but she called in on his first show and told him to do no harm, I believe she said. And she told Fox News that they should take less interest in other people's bodies. I just love her.
Oh,
that's awesome.
That is great.
She is making it better.
Hey.
Not even joking.
We're here today with Sarah Tapscott, who is a comedy writer. I never call you Sarah, but you're just known as Tapscott in my world.
Are you like a Madonna where you just have one name?
I feel like it's more like I feel like Elliot's my coach. Like, that's how, like, calling me by my last name is real bro. I love it.
I feel like in general, like when we wrote on New Girl together, everyone called you Tapscott. And I don't know if that's a general thing. I don't know if that's the vibe. But I know you're currently writing on
the Sex Lives of College Girls.
Great. The Sex Lives of College Girls.
Fantastic show. I love it.
Are you called Tapscott in that room?
That's such a good question.
Is it? Are we sure?
Because I genuinely, I don't know. And I'm trying to think, I'm like, I think people, maybe a little, I was so used to people calling me Tapscott and like Tappy.
Yeah.
Like when I was younger, like Tappy was a real thing.
Was that your nickname when you were younger, Tappy?
I feel like in high school, people called me Tappy. I never chose it. It was, you know, given to me. And, but I feel like in this room, some people do. And it almost feels awkward to hear it because I don't think it's normal in that room. But I like it. It feels like, listen, like we're old pals.
I'm a big one on accepting your nicknames and rolling with it. There was a guy I knew. There was a guy I knew in Michigan who we called him Cookie. His name was Brian Cook. We called him Cookie, and he was a little bit of a stiff guy. So that I think baked into the nickname was the joke that like he's sort of like cold.
Yeah.
And
right.
at like 3 or 4 months in, he's like, I don't want to be called that anymore. And so we're like, well, then you're definitely going to be called that.
Well, no, I don't think you should accept nicknames, because when I was in fifth grade, there was my real name is Scott Honiger, and there were two Scott H's in classes. There was Scott Heaton and me, Scott Honiger. And so he was Scott H-E, and I became Scott H-O, thus Scotty Ho. Calling a child a hoe is not an appropriate nickname.
Look, that's fair. I won't disagree with that, Alan. I mean, we can certainly agree on that.
What I really don't like is when people try to start their own nicknames.
Yes.
Like if I, it's almost, I mean, I guess, I think there was maybe one time where people asked me, and I was like, well, people sometimes call me Tappy, and you're like, what if I, that's an immediate, doesn't, no one will take on to that. Absolutely. Elliot, I feel like we called you Elliot. We never, like, what else?
There's really
what,
no
what
nickname
have you been
for
called?
Elliot. I mean, I sometimes say Ellie, but like, there really is no nickname for Elliot.
Yeah.
Some people call me Ellie, but, or L. I don't like when people like choose to call me L when I've met them right away. Mm. That always weirds me out. And I've definitely come across that in, I will say, a pattern of toxic men.
Yeah.
And wait,
call you
men?
L?
Men call you L?
Yeah, there have been some partners of people in my life who have been like, oh yeah, Elle. And I'm like, oh, we just met.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, all right.
That's too
all
much.
Right.
Yeah. When people force nicknames like onto people, like when they first meet you, that becomes a little Trumpy. You know what I mean? It just becomes a little because that's what he does. He does it with anyone. Like, you know, Lion Ted Cruz or whatever it is. Like, he just will add something onto it. No, mm-hmm. don't do that. No.
Yeah. But his aren't even clever. Yeah. I mean, Elle is like, could be endearing, but like Lion Ted, it's like, I mean, it's always just been like,
what? It sounds like something an evil guy in a Western would say. Look at Lion Ted Lion over there. Ted.
Yeah, like, or like a garbage pail kid.
Yeah. I honestly, now, garbage pail kids came back recently in my life.
Oh, and
somebody, they did, right?
Only in the sense that somebody was like, you know what I fucking love? I love the garbage pail kids. And I was rocketed back to a traumatized, like, I'm sorry, and if you all love those GP kids, I like the idea of a little kid with like fucking needles coming out of his face, and it's just like, and to be like, I'm like Barfy Brian, like I was like, it's insane.
But the counterpoint to the Garbage Pail Kids, the Cabbage Patch Kids, were just as terrifying because even though they were innocent and in cabbages, they still were terrifying looking.
Mm-hmm. Babies from the earth. Babies from I think cabbages are nightshades.
I told you guys.
Babies from nightshades.
I told you guys about my grandma making me a Cabbage Patch doll, right? I have to tell Sarah. To tell Sarah. You'll
she
love this.
Made
Sarah.
You
yes,
one?
We were so That's poor insane. We couldn't afford a Cabbage Patch doll. And so she made me a Cabbage Patch doll, but she thought that they were hyper realistic baby dolls. So she sewed in a little penis and balls on this baby. And I had a doll with like the tiniest little penis and balls, like fabric penis and balls. And it was so disturbing. And I wish I still had it. I wish I still had it.
How are we just learning about
I've told
about
this to you before.
Now.
I know I've said it on this podcast before. I know it. Listeners, please comment if you've heard before. I know I have.
Well, here's an important question. Did regular Cabbage Patch dolls have genitals?
I don't know because I never played with one. I don't know.
I think most dolls don't have genitals because I think that is the default. Children,
right.
Children do skew towards exposing the genitals. It's like the joke. It's like, you know, kids are like, oh, well, let's, you know, see Barbie's pussy or whatever. I don't know.
Oh my God.
Like, I mean, but I know I wasn't the only kid that was like, well, what's underneath the clothes?
Yeah, but they're not saying, let's see Barbie's pussy as a 6-year-old. They're like, let's see what's under the dress.
No, I mean, I'm using adult language.
Your grandmother sewing a tiny pussy is just like, I don't know why that's worse than sewing tiny balls and dicks. I don't know. There's a depth to it that takes too much. But where I thought you were going is that hyper realistic. She was like, made it out of like a cabbage head, but like, no, like this is like, she's like,
she spent
sewed
a
the
long
genitals.
Time sewing this felt, not felt. It was like a nylon type. Yeah, it was a nylon type baby fabric. And it looked very realistic. I was very proud of her as my 5-6 year old self. But then every other child did, I took it out of its thing. And then I see a penis and balls and I'm like, whoa. I think it. I'm not gonna go further with that. I was gonna say something else, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Her just by the fire late at night, just pulling the string on the tiny balls.
More like sitting next to my Nazi grandpa, just yelling about things. That's what it was more like, with needle and thread, remembering the war.
I'm almost done on
history.
I'm done with the left ball sack, Tom. Just give me a second. I feel like. In terms of like kids' obsession, this is where you're getting me, and I don't know how we ended up here, but we're in this cul-de-sac.
Let's go.
The kids' obsession with like dolls and genitalia. I don't think I thought about genitalia as much as I just knew naked was like naughty, but also avant-garde.
Bohemian.
And I would just, my mom knew, she would tell me that. Anytime they got me a doll, the clothes were ripped off immediately. Oh. Naked dolls everywhere. I was like, clothes, no go.
Where were you from? Where are you from?
I am from Iowa.
Oh, that's interesting. I was expecting that to be more of like a coastal situation, but in Iowa, that's very progressive. Mm-mm,
no, just horny in the Midwest, and I had nowhere to go. And I would strip the clothes off. And I do remember so specifically, I don't remember necessarily doing this, but I remember the phone call, lying in bed. My mom, our washer and dryer room was like across from my room where the phone was. And I remember her getting a call late at night and her taking it and being like, yes, yes. Oh, yeah, I'll talk to her. Thanks. And then her coming into my room and being like, did you take your two Barbies and smash them together without clothes and tell Audrey that that's what women do? That was like, I did. And I'm not an authority on it. And I did it. And I remember her being like, you can't do that outside of this house. It wasn't like you can't do it. It was like, just keep it indoors.
Fact that she allowed you to let the Barbie scissor indoors at home.
Just keep it out. And so that's, I just, knowing that, I'm like, oh, okay. I was obsessed with some sort of like, we must tell the truth. But outside of that, did you guys have an obsession with like dolls and like taking clothes off? No,
I definitely did, but I wasn't allowed to have dolls because it wasn't like the boy thing to do. So whenever I did, I'd have to get them in secret, or I'd have to like, or my grandma would make me one and my dad would just have to deal with it. But it was always very much like an under radar sort of like campaign for me to be able to get a doll in any kind of way.
Yeah. Like,
my little sister had dolls and I would definitely want to play with them. And in my house, my parents couldn't care less. Like they you know, do whatever you want. You know, they couldn't care less, but I wasn't really, I was actually going to ask, I feel like, I mean, Cabbage Patch Dolls, not Garbage Pail Kids, but Cabbage Patch Dolls were a little bit before, slightly before our time.
They were.
Like
they were.
It feels like a child of the 70s kind of thing,
well,
right?
No, I think they were introduced in the early 80s, but they were definitely before our times in terms of popularity, which is the basis of my career, too. Everything that I've done since that Cabbage Patch Doll is one step past the popularity mark.
And they were like gross, like they were like they smelled like babies, right?
I don't think they smelled. They didn't have a smell. I don't know where you're getting that.
I think they had a scent. No, I think they were supposed to smell like babies.
Maybe.
And
I don't know.
I remember just like, ugh, I don't think of a feeling.
They were supposed
of them
to smell like babies?
Yeah.
Like
I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
I remember there was a doll that would pee.
Yes.
I remember thinking that was kind of fun.
I remember that.
I was intrigued by that. And I remember there was a doll that you could feed, and just the way it was like you would put like a spoon near its mouth and the food would disappear, obviously not into the baby's mouth, but back into the spoon. But it was the, you know, creating the illusion that you were feeding the baby. Yeah. And for some reason, I was obsessed with that. I wanted that. But I wasn't like I had an older brother. He had He-Man action figures. Mm. So I wasn't like
He-Man
a doll
was so
household.
Hot. I fucking loved G.I. Joes too. G.I. Joes to this day.
See, we weren't allowed. G.I. Joe was too dark for our family.
No.
It was
too dark.
That's G.I. Joes.
Yeah.
Wait, walk me through the definition of too dark. Like,
because
what?
People were always dying in war.
Sure.
G.I. Joe.
Sure.
Every time, I only watched that cartoon when my mom was like, you know, away or upstairs or showering or something. And every time I turned it on, there someone was dead.
Wait,
I'm like, Jesus,
I literally just
even
had
for my sake,
like a Wonder Years flashback of little Brent being like, mom's in the shower. Let's go watch TV.
Well, it's true, right? You know, it's true.
Well, Brent's from a very I would say prototypical liberal, dare I say pacifist Ann Arbor household. Yeah. Where they watched Nova together. So I can understand why. I can imagine, I could see your parents being against shows that were cartoons that I didn't really watch G.I. Joe, but I feel like it pushed the military industrial complex.
Well, for what
us.
It's worth, I do want to throw out, my dad did serve in the Navy, but I would say largely that, that was certainly my mom's approach. And honestly, I don't think I fundamentally disagree. I don't know if you need, if a kindergartner needs to watch a cartoon about war and death.
Well, I didn't need to watch the cartoon, but I did need to see the one G.I. Joe fuck the other G.I. Joe. Like, I needed to put them in those positions.
Sure.
That was very important to me as a child.
I'm sure you could find that now online if you'd like.
I'm sure I can. I'll look for that.
Yeah.
Now, Sarah, you I would say, if I may use the language, you came out more recently Ooh. As a gay woman.
Oh, you! How dare you!
I'm just a little baby. I'm still playing with the dolls.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So, like, when you look back in retrospect, do you feel like there was a you had to hide, or not necessarily hide, but mute your feelings, at least if we're basing it on you as a kid getting pseudo-shamed for smashing two girl dolls together?
I mean, I don't think there was, to say hide implies an awareness. And I do not think there was even remotely an awareness. I was just obsessed with like being desired. I didn't care what the sex was. I didn't care what it was. I was attracted. I remember thinking that the guy, the dark haired guy in A River Runs Through It, who played opposite of Brad Pitt, was so handsome and like so hot. And to this day, I love a masked lady who looks like that. And that is there is something. I don't think I ever thought about it at the time, but in hindsight, I definitely had a neighbor who would, she would come lay on me after school and I would pay her a quarter to lay on me and just talk about the day.
That's such a Brit move. Yes. I love that. Such a Brit move.
Wait, did you pay someone?
Well,
when does that now?
We don't need to get into the weeds on that.
We'll talk about that after we're finished recording, Sarah.
Okay,
that's
okay.
Amazing. Your little empire.
Do we just lay still on you?
We would talk about the day. We would take off our shirts and then she would lay on me. And then I would just be like, so anyway, tell me about that. Like, isn't it kind of crazy that our bus is so late? And just talking with her shirt off. And I do remember the day that she was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I was like, that's fine. I don't either. And then, of course,
that was always the soul crushing moment for a queer person, a queer younger person, when you are trying to foster your sexuality in a way that you can't really get anywhere else. But then there are these, eventually there probably will just be straight people. They become just full-fledged straight people. But, and then their childs, they're like experimenting and shit. And then when they have that moment where they're like, nah, this isn't for me. It's like soul crushing. It's like, that's your one access to something. And then all of a sudden they have to go off and be straight. How boring.
Yes.
Well,
you know what's interesting though? Let me throw out the flip side of that. This is something that I've sort of reconciled. And
shirts on.
That's a great point, Alan, of course. Something I've reconciled with recently was that I remember being eager to get my friends shirtless and that sort of thing when I was younger, middle school. I'm thinking mostly middle school, kind of maybe early high school.
I'm still like that.
And in hindsight, I feel like I was a little overzealous with, I think, a couple friends who always seemed sort of reticent. Mm. And I'm vaguely regretful of that, if that makes sense.
Nothing
ever aggressive or really pushy. Yeah. You know me, I ultimately am very passive. But I just, like, there were a couple, one friend in particular, I was really attracted to one friend. Yeah. And I always used every opportunity to like touch him, put my arm around him, buddy. And I remember there were multiple moments where he was like not having it body language wise. And I don't know. I mean,
queer guilt because we weren't allowed to express our sexuality in any capacity or any way. We didn't have a normal way like other straight people do to like flirt with a girl at school or ask her on a date to the prom. Yeah. So you have to do weird things like get a boner over putting your arm around your friend.
Right, you know what I mean? Right. It's true. Like,
about it. Like,
yeah. Also, like if you feel like you're regretful of it, it's like, that it exactly speaks to what Alan was talking. I mean, same thing with Sarah. It's like quote unquote regret is like, you should really look at it pretty empathetically. Yeah. Like you weren't doing anything to make anybody feel uncomfortable. Yeah. You were just trying to exert some sense of what made you feel different.
And you probably didn't have a quarter
in a way that
like
wasn't allowed.
You couldn't pay him a quarter.
Yeah, do. Right. Yeah, I was a paper boy. I was loaded back in there.
I was going to say you weren't rich enough to give them a quarter for their body.
Wait, Sarah, I have to ask you. So, like, if you came out later, you know, not later in life, because that makes you sound like you're like, you know, Vanessa Redgrave pushing the 80s or something. No, but like, you came out later in life. Like, what? Because that's such a rare process, I think, that often doesn't get talked about much anymore because, you know, of our generation, we all kind of like, you know, there was like 20 something you're coming out or whatever. So, like, what? How has it been for your friend group and for just sort of the people you're around to then be this sort of new queer person to them?
Good question for once.
First off, you can call me Tappy. Secondly, you know what? It's evolved, and it's also evolved. It's basically, I see it as, what's my comfort level with just being my authentic self and letting people be who they are? And that has been actually kind of hopefully the angle on it for myself, because, you know, there has been a privilege to some degree, right? Being in LA now, being in my 30s, coming out at a time when social media and friends and being on a coastal city, that it's actually, there's a lot of places to find community and celebration. Having a family personally who, even though from the Midwest, you know, for the most part, have always felt quite liberal. They, during most of like the last whatever how many years during Trump time, like they were losing their minds. They were the one like blue house in a red town. And
too.
So like, right. Like, so I'm very fortunate, and almost because of that, actually, luckily, they so don't want to feel super critical that they almost are overly accepting in a way. So I'm just very fortunate in that sense. So that's one side, right? And I can't not ignore that. And then the other side is, you know, you hit your mid late 30s, and that's normally the time when, you know, I froze my eggs in my early 30s, thinking I was like, okay, I'm gonna, when I was still with a guy, being like, I'm gonna have a kid later. For some reason, something just ain't right. Yeah. Like, but I will, I'm gonna have a kid later. and then you have these plans, and you're like, I'm gonna get married by 36, and I'm gonna have kids by this time. And then suddenly, when everything, you kind of, for me, I've gone back in time. And so having to live out certain experiences and have desires that feel so juvenile in a way that when paired with my friends who have multiple kids, or some of them going through divorces, like so farther along in their lives. And I suddenly feel at certain times that I'm living like my early 20s for the first time. Yeah. It is hard for them to relate. Yeah. It feels, but I just have to be like, this is who I am. And I cannot have shame when they're like, wow, that's crazy. You're out again till 4 a.m. Wow. And you're like, and I was like, I got a tattoo that I regret. And they're like, cool. They're like, I'm pregnant with my eighth kid. Oh. And you're just like a little bit like, oh my God, am I fucking up?
Yeah.
And that has been the biggest challenge. And also, that being said, I will like, it also has been a very fast process. So going through, I don't know, this is going to be weird, but I'm going to show you.
Okay.
So like, I have like so much like little kid shit around me that like inner child stuff is like so big right now. Oh, yeah. And I'm not sure if
miniatures, you love miniatures.
I do love miniatures, but that's a different thing, Ellie. It's a different freak obsession. But like, I don't know for you guys if it's even whether or not you were even consciously aware of it at that age, going back as an adult to access that kid who maybe couldn't have those voices and those experiences. And so it's been, as long as I know that I'm being true to that kid, whatever age and stage I am in, I'm trying to feel okay with it. Mm-hmm. But it has been like a bit interesting. Especially in the comedy community and like going through, you share so much on like TV shows, and Elliot knows this, like where you're in a room and you're like, I shared so much about dating men and things, and then coming back and being like, anyway, so let me tell you, I feel like I'm with a non-binary, previously trans, like identifying person who this, and then you're just like, all right, like you're, everyone's like, we're trying to catch up, and yeah. It's been a little, I guess it's been interesting to try to connect with people on that, but I've been quite surprised.
You know, you talk about sort of, I don't know how to exactly rephrase, but sort of delving back into these sort of younger obsessions that you had. And weirdly, I find myself often longing for my sexuality when I was younger because it was purer. It was distant because I'd never hooked up with anyone until college. And it wasn't,
didn't have those quarters
weighed down by, but it wasn't weighed down by the difficulty of actually being adult. Yeah. And like, you know, now these days, dating on Grindr, dating on Tinder, trying to get people to meet you. I mean, I literally just had like a weekend of like 9 people, you know, ghosting and or bailing. And you're like, I remember the day when you could just invite a friend over you were attracted to for a sleepover. And like,
yeah.
And like, I have moments where I'm like, I long for the simplicity of that, you know?
Yeah.
100%.
So I definitely,
it's also kind of like what you were saying about sort of, you know, living in the world that you're living in, which is sort of like right now, at least celebrating that youthful sexual side that you probably didn't get to have when you were younger. And I remember I'm from St. Louis, and I was home in St. Louis, and I ran into a friend from high school who like has like an 18-year-old or something now, like, or a 20-year-old or whatever, like some ridiculous age. And I made my first response, and I don't know why this was like the response that I had, but my first response was like, oh, I've probably seen porn with people that age. Like,
yeah.
It was like this.
You said that out loud.
I said it out loud. And the face was sort of like, whoa. And I was like, well, okay. But I mean, it's true though. And like, and if we were like amongst our friend group, it would be hilarious. But to a person with a 20-year-old, it's not so funny. And it's like, well, they're probably, but I love that. I kind of love that because I recognize that like my life is very different intentionally because I don't respond or understand that part of my life. And I'm actually really, really glad that I get to live this sort of like, not perpetual adolescence, but perpetual sort of like hopeful for something new or something exciting. I'm open to the excitement of life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I
as
will say, as, no, go ahead, Elliot, please.
No, I was going to say as interesting and potentially challenging as it can be, like, you know, you are getting to sort of start over. And like, again, of course it's, you know, with women, it's so much harder, and there's that much more societal pressure to, you know, settle down, quote unquote, or marry and have kids. Yeah. But at the same time, like, but this is your life, and like it's, and you also, I think, embodied. Like, I've never been so happy for somebody to come out because I was just like, whoa, she is just emanating this like queer joy. I've never seen somebody like enjoy pride this much.
Oh, wow.
like really do it up, like globe. It really felt like globetrotting.
You
know, just like so much joy and like community. And I'm like, that looks fun.
Well, that's that good fun. To hear.
I was really happy for you,
Elliot. That's so lovely to hear. And I will say a shout out to Elliot. Like, we during the strike, I mean, granted, the strike gave me a lot of time. I was like, well, I got about 6 months, didn't know it at the time, thought it was 1 month, turned out to be 6, to just be a fucking rage, like an insane human being. And so, but like, I...
A lot of dancing.
Oh, so much dancing. And I will say that Elliot was so lovely. Like, we, you know, did our picketing slash then going straight to Bob's Big Boy. And then like talking about this and feeling... so just kind of seen and celebrated with you was nice because it is a thing where, you know, like you lose. I for me, it's all about, and I don't know if you guys have this, I always was just looking for benchmarks, whether it's career or life, of like, am I okay? Am I enough? Did I do it right? Did I do anything right?
Yeah.
And we just want to see reflections of that. And I think early on when I realized like, okay, I'm going to really go for this and honor this part of me that is like screaming. Like, I can't deny this anymore. It's like my inner kid, like Kool-Aid man down the door and was just like, we want women. And I was like, all right, like calm the fuck down. And so I was like, let's go. And but as I was doing that, what I do think was nice is I was like, I'm going to have to parent this kid, right? So to parent my inner thing, I found like a queer sex therapist online. And she was like, you need to go out and you need to see as many possible reflections of what it is to be queer in this world as possible. And I was like, I really don't think that's necessary. I'm happy. I've got like a couple of friends. And she was like, you really have to. And finally, and then I was like, I think we're done. And I ended our sessions. And then I went and immediately when I went out in the world, I realized she was right because I needed to see that I wasn't just trying to be like, how do I live a straight life, but within my queerness? Like, yeah. I needed to see what the options were so that everything came from a choice of agency. Mm-hmm. Everything was purposeful and intentional. And so in order to do that, I have to know what's on the menu. And turns out fucking everything is.
And
yeah.
So that's what I needed to see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. I'm glad. Cause I think, you know, ultimately it was like, I hope that I could give you the permission to see that, like, it as much as it, what we always talk about, at least in our podcast and among us as friends, is that it can also be really hard and that people don't talk about that enough. Yeah. And that's like, I mean, our podcast is called You're Making It Worse for a Reason. Yeah. So we can complain about other gay guys, but, you know, still just I'm so happy yeah. for you. And I'm so
I
glad
I love
you
when people come out like later in life. I think I always tell them, make sure you have health insurance and lick everything. You know what I mean? Just like, just go crazy. Just go crazy. But have that health insurance. Keep that up to date. You'll need it. Trust me.
Well, Sarah, you've been such a delightful guest. Where can people find you on the internet? Where can they
if you want them
you?
To?
If you want them to.
Oh, I guess like Instagram. Oh boy. Find me on Instagram. Slide in there. Ladies, please. It's I'm on Sarah Tapp. I'm not on Threads. I mean, I think I'm on Threads. I'm not on Threads. Is
you
anyone
don't,
on
you
Threads?
You don't need it.
No one's on Threads.
Your social media is joyful, but also I respect that you don't feel a need to fuel it necessarily. Mm. But there are some great pictures on there.
There's some good pics. We've taken pics. We're keeping.
Yeah.
I will say I have done my due diligence to know most every lady-leaning event.
Photographer
and lady-leaning event in Los Angeles. I'm happy to share those at any point. Awesome. You can see me dancing out there. Awesome. Yes.
Well, go see your dance in the world.
Well, thank you, Sarah,
thanks,
so
Tappy.
Much. Thanks, Tappy.
Oh, that was
so
fun. Of course, yes.
And another thing. So, it's come up a few times recently where I will be having a conversation on Hinge with someone, and there's just something about the conversation that strikes me as either too generic or too bizarre to be real. And in a few instances, I've started to wonder if I'm actually chatting with a robot profile. And so I want your guys' take on this, and I also, of course, want our listeners' take on it as well. So on Hinge, I matched with this guy, and I'll be the first to acknowledge all, Jesus, I'm sorry. I'm like struggling to read my own fucking notes. Okay. So I'll be the first to acknowledge all of what I'm about to share very well could just be the result of a quirky conversation with an eccentric person.
Yeah.
I get that. That said, I still think it's just a little bit too askew to be from a human. So anyway, so let's start. So I went back to his profile and I read one of his prompts and it was sort of a red flag to begin with. And I wanted to read it to you. One of his prompts on Hinge said, "We'll get along if ... you love live oak trees," which is to me a weird prompt. Like, why would you have to qualify that the oak trees are live?
Right.
But anyway, so that's the beginning. So we matched and we started chatting. His first message to me was a link of my own stand-up.
Oh.
Now, this might seem like the least robotic thing to do, but there was something so bizarre about receiving a link. Like, why would you send me a clip of myself?
I've gotten
right,
that.
Like, you've never seen it before.
It's creepy.
Like, I've never seen it
before. It's creepy when they send you their reactions to your Google search of you. Like, it's very creepy.
I guess the other thing, the addendum I was going to add is I have gone on a lot of dates. I've chatted with a lot of people on apps over these many years, and fucking 99.5% of them do nothing to learn anything about you. So I'm already surprised.
What's your name?
Yeah. Who are you? Oh, honey. Who are you, honey?
Great to go on a date.
Right. Why are you all of a sudden mad? So anyway, so that caught me off guard. So let's get to our conversation. All right. One of his messages was, Michigan alums tend to be some of the most interesting people. Now that to me was sort of like faux flattery, but also just like, again, skewed almost too generic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the most interesting people.
The most interesting people. He said, another message he sent said, I'm flattered by every like I receive. I instantly found you hunky, as several of your photos show things that are turn-ons for me. I'd never swipe left in such an instance. Now, let me clarify. All of my pictures are selfies where you can't see the background, minus one where I'm at the gym. And as we all know, gym pics are like a dime a dozen on Gay Hinge. So I thought that in and of itself was like, again, the phrasing was so generic. All of several of your photos show things that are turn-ons for me. I would never swipe left in such an instance.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if you're a robot.
Yes.
Is this another, like, are you translating another language? Like, well, it sounds like Google Translate.
That's what I was wondering the whole time. What if he's foreign and he's literally just using Google Translate and copying and pasting?
That's an interesting possibility.
It's definitely a possibility. So, but let's continue. He said this on why he joined the apps. He said, quote, "It all started when I saw this incredibly hot Japanese guy on YouTube. I thought, quote, wow, I wonder if I could find guys like that who are interested in relationships on dating apps." Now, this to me is the weirdest statement of all.
Yeah.
This is a 32-year-old man saying, oh, I joined a dating app because I saw a good-looking person on YouTube.
It doesn't even register as human to me.
No. It doesn't. I mean, I don't get the intent of it being like a bot, you know, but I feel like it feels more like Google Translate to me.
So, yeah, no, I totally hear you. So this is my suspicion. I'm obviously not an AI expert. My suspicion has been that bots can accrue a ton of colloquial conversations via dating apps.
Yeah.
So that's just been, and again, I'm sure maybe an AI expert would tell me that this is not how we do it, blah, blah, blah. But that's where my head goes. Like, if you want to create a system that speaks naturally, you will get a lot of natural casual conversations on dating apps.
Yeah.
You asked for his Instagram, right?
So I also, so long story short, at the end of this, I kept just being like, I don't know if this guy's real. He actually was cute and I liked his pictures. So I asked for his Instagram and he sent it to me. And it was one of those Instagrams that has not one picture of the person. It was only nature pictures.
Yeah.
And then I think I even conceded. I was like, hey man, I'm just like, I'm not entirely sure that you're real. And then he sent me a picture. He sent me the URL to his website, and that was down. So his website was down, but his website had his name, but it was like you know when you go to a website and it's like forbidden URL. Yeah, 404. So what do you think? Alan? What do you think?
Well, you say that I was looking at, so like Snapchat has sort of like a AI person that you can talk to. So I was like, maybe I should ask them what they think about this. Do they use bots on dating apps? I don't see.
I don't get why it would be a bot unless it's like a phishing thing where they're trying to get your information. But that also feels like a lot of work for a lot of for a little payback. You know what I mean? In if it was a bot. So part of me just thinks it was just like a weird person who doesn't speak English. Like they're trying
to. Was he from another country?
No, he went to UCLA and he.
Oh, wait.
He claimed to be like a programmer and writer.
I have my Snapchat AI assistant has said, yes, some dating apps use bots to stimulate conversations. They're programmed to respond to certain prompts. But don't worry, there are also plenty of real people on dating apps, too. It's always a good idea to be cautious and trust your instincts when chatting with someone. Have you had any interesting experience on dating apps?
Snapchat just shut the fuck up. But that's an interesting answer. I had no idea that was like officially a thing.
I mean, it seems weird. I don't know why it would be.
When you showed me these pictures and this conversation at first, I went back and forth because I was like,
yeah,
I really did. I was like, oh, I think he might be from a different country. Oh, he's not from a different country. I think he might just have a bizarre way of speaking, especially after sending you your own content.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think it's a bot. I don't understand the end game in like AI technology needing to have a weird conversation with you. That makes no sense to me. I don't know what the end game would be, what they get out of it, but it's just too bizarre. But why would anybody go through the steps of only making it harder and stranger to do? I don't get it.
Or are they were trying to get information from you to like sucker your account out away from you or something, like, you know.
Well, I mean, that's
hacker.
So there was a moment when he asked for my credit card, and at that point I gave him Elliot's credit card because I was like, look, I just want to be cautious about this.
Yeah.
So I gave him Elliot's credit card. And
I gave up on these dating apps, but there were plenty of instances where I was like, at least on Hinge, or I guess Tinder as well, where I just was like, that's not a person. Like, the picture is unless like there are like a quarter of gay guys are brain dead and
possibly.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
You can tell your mother Merry Christmas. For once we agree.
My Aunt Joanne would say, not only would I buy a gay nutcracker, I'd buy a trans menorah. Liberal to a fault. How about Aunt Anne?
My Aunt Anne would say, I know who should have gay nutcracker as their username. Elliot. I can't wait to tell your Uncle Ray I made a sex joke.
Well, happy holidays to everybody. And
happy holidays. And we'll see you next week.
Happy holidays. Happy holidays.
You're dancing like friends.
Happy holidays.